Session number 16715, John Jarvis, reel 10.
Mr. Jarvis, reel 10. We were talking about your first camp in Italy, Mr. Jarvis. Was there any attempts made to escape by any of the people that you know in that camp?
No. I never heard of none, if there was any, no.
How long were you there?
Could have been six months. Could have been about that, 6 or 9 months, somewhere around about there.
And where did you go to after that?
Well, I remember being paraded, and I think someone got in the mines. Of course, we belonged to Durham, we were miners, you know, because they wanted this group of 50 people to go up into the high country, and that would be miners. And they just picked me, I don't know why, I was picked to go on. Because I always like the change, so I might as well tell you the truth. And I sort of, especially when they told us that we'd get double ration. Now, apparently, when you went out to work, although it was a 10-hour day working, you got double skilly and you got double bread. Now, that to me, I'd have shifted mountains of man to get a double bread ration, so I'll tell you now. And I was quite pleased when I went. And the only thing I'd against going. The only thing may I would have out it was gone. None of my mates would go. I only had two mates, one from Consett and one from Bishop Auckland. But they would prefer to stop in the organised camp. Well, I didn't blame them for that. I said, well, I'm going to have a go at this. And we were picked, and there was 50 of us. No sergeants. And at the time, everybody else addressed me as corporal, and I was more or less, there was four of us when we got to this camp with tapes on, and we were in charge of the camp. What it meant, I don't know. It meant that we were in charge of discipline, sort of stuff. I'd had to go away, you know. And I remember us parading and going in these tucks. And I remember being in a Ariel flight, you know, one of them big bookers that takes you across from mountain to mountain. And really speaking, we were more or less mixing with the civilian people again. And to me, it felt great, you know, after being fastened up for 9 months or so. It was great just to get out and hear people talking and say how they dressed. And, little mannerisms, you know, how interesting they are. And I was always interested in languages, like when I went to school. And I did 3 years French, and I seemed to be able to pick the Italian phrases up very pretty good, you know, especially if they talked slower, you know. Down in Naples and Sicily and them places, they speak like machine guns, brrr, like that. And well, when you get up the north of Italy, at Bologna, further north of Milan, they have like a slow draw, like American accent, you know, and they speak a little bit slow, and give you time to, in your mind, to change in English, sort of stuff. Anyway, we went on this thing, we got to this camp, and it was in the mountains, in the what we call Alps, in it, Alps, the Dolomites. These are Dolomites, in it, Dolomites. All right, so it's part of the range that runs from Milan across the Yugoslavia. It's where they all used to go to ski, Cortina and them places, down in the Dolomites. Well, I think we used to call it, when we went to school, the Lower Alps. Anyway, it was a homemade camp, out of wood, you know. It was in, well, the timber was. And the job they had in mind for us was to put this tunnel through from the river, down through this bit of a range of mountains, and to come out at the other end and be a big hydroelectric works and supply all the plateau with electric, which was a fantastic idea. I believe it was where we were going, it was about a 10-year job or something like that. And you had that bit extra freedom was that you got up in the morning and you paraded and you went to work and you had only gear on. You went to work and you got break at dinner time. If you could, you cut it a bit sandwich off the work, man. That, you know. And they used to bring a bit extra for you. You know, they're quite good people. Nice people. Chest. Well, we went there and we used to break at 12. They used to count us in the morning, 6. Count us at the dinner time at 12. And count us on the night when they brought us back at 6. We weren't working all the time, you know. We were to be beside. And it was quite close to the Italian village, you know. And the people were sort of newfangled with the British, you know. And
did it have a name, this camp?
Not that I know of. But that's it.
Was it a small camp?
Yeah, pretty small, just 50 working. 50 None of it. I believe the place, the area, was called Fair Monkey, which roughly translated means foot of mountains. P-A-D means your feet, and Monty means mountains. Foot of the mountains. But I think I heard that name quite often, and called it Fair Monkey. It was just like wood shacks, little guns, like, you know, very nice wood shacks. And way around, you know, like an interpreter and a camp commandant and a few soldiers to guard you. Because we didn't have much garden, you know. We were pleased as punch. We'd get in there. What if we'd freed them, you know what I mean? We were getting out every day and talking to. And the best part about it was we, such as me, I was to look to try and speak Italian, you know. I was to talk to anybody come along. And you said, well, I could understand. I picked it up in, basically, you know, French. It's Latin, basic Latin. I like the Spanish and Italian, they're all based on. And if you have a smattering of one, you can sharp. I know many a time when I'm watching television, even now, 50 odd years after, and I listen to the Spanish people talking. There's lots of phrases and lots of words pretty similar to Italian, you know. Pretty. So I enjoyed, like, talking to people. It, you know, after you've been locked up, you don't talk. You know, I enjoy it. And to be quite frank, I was happier there than what I'd been since I was took prisoner of war. You know, it really never entered my head not to try to escape. I was just more or less comfortable, as long as they didn't come and take us to Germany. We were quite content to stop there to the end of the war, you see. Because at that time, the British had invaded Sicily, and it was just a matter of time for them invading Italy, see. And I forgot to mention that our interpreter, he was a Geordie. He spoke. Oh, I knew one day I was going on, and this boy said to me, have you got any tabs, matter? And I looked around, it was this Italian bloke. I said, where did you learn to speak like that? I believe it was one of the sheep. No, shears, the south shears. So I've been no shears and south shears, but he'd come over to fight for Mussolini, you know, when Mussolini had called them all back. He says, I'd most like to see you again after the war. I said, well, I came out to my road, and I was joking. I was just joking with him, like, I've never been to see you. I never inquired about him. I didn't even know his name. Them days you didn't ask me Amazon nothing, you know, you're just pleased to be alive at this time. Anyway, the decent bloke. And he was instrumental in me escaping, to be quite frank, you know.
It was a well-run camp, was it? Well-organised?
Oh, they were very lax, very good. It was a pleasure being there. The camp commandant, a little Italian colonel or something, a major or somebody was. And he didn't want nothing to do with the war. He wanted it finished. He, you know, he's sick of it. And then anything he could get, yeah, it, you know, like bits of extras, you know what I mean? Like, you know, everybody likes onions and that in the stew and that and bits of odds and ends and beans and that. Whereas at the big camp, you're lucky if you've got a bit of macaroni in it. Now, off the local farmers, and that you have to be charging in. He's a really good fella. He's really tough. It was a pleasure being like with him in comparison with my previous encounters, you know, where nobody seemed to give a book of whether they lived or died. This man did. He can't. And he was just as keen as us to see the war finished and get back home and start all over again. And it was good. It was a good little camp. Nobody got punished much, you know.
Can we spend a little time talking about the camp? Mm-hmm. You said it was wooden huts.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the sleeping
just
arrangement?
The bunks, blankets and palliatives. Oh, aye, it was very hygienic. We made ourselves, you know, we could shower and we had bags of soap because we got the soap parcel, our parcels, you know.
So you got your parcel.
You kind of, there was a bar of soap, you know. And we didn't want yours because we used to save up. Sometimes we got a full bar, we used to bat with the lassies or the Italian lads, you know, that were skirting. Oh, they'd give you all the rations for the bar soap. They were very popular, bar of soap. Very, very, especially that looks, you know, looks, toilet soap. Oh, they'd do anything for the bar of looks. Aye, great. No, I was, in comparison with other camps, it was heaven. It was champion. You got up when you had something to occupy your mind, you know. You could go and, if you felt like working a bit, well, we used to. See, what happened was in the Stone Face, it had just started. See? And there you used to chalk, and you had to come for a stand rail. Turamani is a thing you always used to have there, especially these hard rock faces. And see, as you'd drill in the water, what is the things out there that come to us? And we'd drill these holes. Maybe stake is, you know, wired to build them. Then he'd come in and stem and fire them, and then we'd go in and dab them skips, and they used to fill them, and, you know, and shove them out and tip them sideways. And that was it. That was the job, just to put this tunnel through this mountain and get the water off the big mountain rivers, you know, and all flowing into this, off and on something like the Tyne Tees Tunnel, you know, like that. It comes down from the Tyne down to the way and then the Tees. It was off and on like that, yes. And we knew it was a long job, you know, we wouldn't hardly make any difference. We used to have to do what we could, you know. When we used to go out there into the skip, we used to dive in the water and have a bit paddle in the water. A nice warm day, you know, it used to be champion.
Did they push you very hard?
No, why not? No, in fact, they were lazy blighters. Once they got drilled and fired, and they used to see up in his body, talking to the girls, you know. No, they were, really speaking, they were quite good. I found the Italians 95%, 98%, real good people, real toughs. Of course, if you're nationality, there's some bad ones, you know, but. To me, I never met a bad Italian. They all did well for me. I only speak well of them, yeah.
What time did your day start?
Well, I got up at 6. I would maybe go walk down to the things. Well, we used to match down. About 20 yards off. That's along this bit road onto the site. See?
You'd be breakfasted before you went. Before you set off.
I wouldn't have breakfast. yeah. No.
Did you get a breakfast?
No. We got double rations. That's 2 bits of bread and 2 bowls of soup.
But that was still a one-day meal situation.
Mm. No, but we got it twice instead of once.
And
that was a Geneva Convention thing or something. Yeah, you got double rations when you work. Say, look at our lads. Did them night and was taken prisoner. You went to coal mines in Poland, where they would get extra rations for working. Well, we got double rations for working there. We got two them panniettes I was talking about, little loaves, like little spoons there. We got two of them and 2 bowls there. So, but it was a long way. By 100% better soap, I put it that way. There was beans in and what they call that stuff, man, they use instead of onions. Very strong it is. And we'll see, you know, it'll be tastier, it'll be nicer.
So you march down to your workplace. What time would you actually start work?
Oh, anywhere half past seven. We supposed to work 10 hours. That was it.
Was there any break in the 10 hours?
Aye, dinner time. Aye. We got a bit of summer at dinner time. Then we march back at 6 o'clock and wash up and that, and then we get our loaf of bread and another bowl of chili, which would be ready for us when we got back. Eh?
Was it dangerous work?
No. Well, it was just starting. I suppose the element of danger was there, you know, but it was small, pretty small. It wasn't as dangerous as them pits, I would tell you now. No, it's just a matter of knowing the rock, and we they used to just joke where you had to be. We just did like labour work, you know. What they were going to do with it when they got down, say, I wasn't there long enough. We was just, shows how fine it was, we'll fish up the skips out by hand and tip them. We say as they go down, they'd have a rope on the engine and pull them up, say. Well, it was just starting. You know, it was a long-term project.
You didn't think of it in terms of being military work?
No, we wouldn't have done it. I don't think the Italians would ask us. I remember once, way back, one of the perts asked us to help unload something, and it was somebody said, oh, it's military equipment, and we refused to unload it, so they banged us back his trucks and took us back to camp. I don't know where that was, you know, way back, James, way back when I first went. But, no, it was no military value. I told you it was most like a 10-year project, eh? And at that time, you know, the British by then had Sicily, eh? And it was just a matter of time before they come to Italy, you know.
How were the Italians around you taking this information? Were they aware that in effect...
Oh, yes, they were over the bloody moon. They're over the moon. The Italians are not fighters. Make good lovers, I reckon, I don't know, but they're not fighters. They didn't want the war. Most ordinary people don't want wars, and they're more ordinary than anybody else. No, they were good people, they were pleased it was over.
What made you want to escape at this time?
Well, I got talking to the lad from Whitley Bay, South Shields somewhere, the interpreter. And he says, invasion, impending invasion. He says, I said, well, what difference will that make to us? I said, oh, we spit it out. Well, he says, I'll tell you what it could do. He says, it could transfer the camp to Germany. Oh, no, that's what I didn't want. I says, are you sure? And he says, I'm pretty certain that's what would happen. He says, if we went afar, what? I think we're about 40 miles from the Menna Pass. That's into Switzerland. And that's where all Germany fits all the stuff down, you know. He said that he was afraid that we might have to go to Germany. He said, that's what was weighing him. Well, I asked him how he felt about it. And he said to me, if there's any way I can help you, he says, don't forget and let us know. Well, I says, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going. I says, I'm going with you. And he says, I'm sorry, you can't. He says, I'll take you so far, but he says, you can't. He says, I've got, I know what he meant, he had relations, you know. He was going to touch his uniform away and go and see me, and hide till the British come. Now, I couldn't do that, say. I says, well, what do you mean you'll help us? He says, I'll take you for a week into the mountains. There's nobody will catch you after you've been up there a week. And he says, you'll have to take your pot look and get in the house and maybe work your way out. I said, that'll do for me. I said, how many can I take with us? Well, he says, it's up to you. He says, I don't know. He says, I'll lead as many as you like. But he says, it must happen on a man. He says, because, see, by then the guards had come that careless, you know, not careless, they just took us for granted. The used to count us on the morning, marches down to work, and count us in at 6 o'clock at night, so therefore you could get maybe 11, 12 hours start. See? And you'll get 11 or 12 hours start in them mountains where we were, with the gorse is 4 foot high, you know, it's been down like that, and it's fantastic mountain for guerrilla warfare and things like that. He says, "Why, all them wants to come." He says, "Oh, but I'm taking you in the mountains." And then he says, "One morning you're waking up, now I'm not there." So I'm telling you this, but don't tell nobody else. But he says, "I'll be fit now." So that's what happened. I don't know how many of us went. I know the first time I took stock, there were six of us.
What was the date? Do you remember?
It must have been near the invasion of Italy. Must have been very close, because he was getting worried.
Bring him for about September of 1943.
Is that what he was? That's it. That's about 1943 it was, yeah. Yeah. September. Yeah. It'd be round about then, yeah. Because when I, about a fortnight or 3 weeks after, I was at a person's house and I knocked at the door and I was that hungry, I was desperate, you know. And I had a lad with us, he was a company lad, a London lad, and he was in pretty bad health. Jimmy, they called him. And he wrote, I had to go with this, and I knocked him. And the person come to the door, and I just said, "Fammy," and that meant that I was hungry, you know, "Fammy." And son inglese, son scapari, the campo consentimento, all the palabra, you know. And he looked at me and he says, "Tedeschi." Because I used to blunder then, yeah, with the son, I said, "No, inglese." I said, "I thought we said, well, it's no good telling anybody lies, I'll finish it up." "No," I said, "I'm inglese," and I said, "I've got a friend, amigo, Montagne, sick, you know, he's sick, I want somebody to look after him." Asked me to come in, and he had the pot on with the soap and that, and you know, all them houses had very good pots with. Same as if the soap was on all the way, you know what I mean? They would just come in and get it every day, probably, that, you know. And you know, he went up the mountain, he fetched me maid down, and he fed us and that. And he told us that we were pretty safe there. And he's oldish fella, you know. And there was him and his niece. And he says, "Stop here for a night or two, but look around for something more permanent, more safe." He says, "We don't know what's going up since the English is invaded." And that's the first time I knew that the Americans had invaded. That's the first time I knew that we didn't invade, you know. And as I was telling you before, this lad, he took us into the mountains. We crossed the road once.
You just walk out of camp to get away?
More or less.
So you'd had your roll call in the morning.
Yeah.
Then how actually did you get away from the camp?
Well, my mate, I know how we got away. I don't know about the others. I don't know how many, nothing. We crept over the underbrush.
With this interpreter?
Yeah. Yeah. And there was some more. I tell you, the first time I took, when he went, when he left us, I don't know when he left us, how many days he was out. I know he took us over this road and pointed the direction. And he said, "That's Venice, that way." See, because he said to me, "If you got to Venice and got a boat, do you think you could?" I said, "I'd dare give it a try, you know. I'd dare try anything, you know." Because our navy was pretty so frame, even in the Adriatic, you know, there were boats. And if we could have gotten a boat, we maybe could have gotten, you know, drive the fishermen to take us down a couple of 100 miles and nobody's been picked up, you say.
How were you dressed? You still had your prison camp uniform?
No. We had our prison camp when we got out. And this, when we went to this first house, as I was telling you about, when we were desperate, there was we were in six. But we, like, split up to go to different houses. Say, me and my mate went to this house, and they went maybe half a mile away. It's sort of lessen, you know, chance of being caught. You know, if we got caught, they maybe get away, sort of style. And if they got caught, we maybe get, you know. We went to this house, he said to me, "You don't run about with them unless you get picked up straight away." He said, "I've got some clothes I'll give you and I'll burn yours." But he says, "You'll have to promise me you never tell nobody, you know, that I'll give you them sort of stuff." And this bloke, he, I do believe at one time he'd been in America. Because he spoke decent French. Like, you know, I couldn't speak French much, you know. But if we were stuck for words, you know, we'd have signs. You know, and if couldn't get the sign, he'd say the word in French, in American, what he called American, you know. To them, it's American. It's in English, you know, it's American, you know. And he still remembered, you know, phrases, American phrases, you know. And bit by bit, we got on, you know. And he gave us these clothes, Alpini, you know, with the feather in, and Alpini to me, and that the point was boots, you know, and nobody had any boots. At that time in Italy, there was scarcity of boots. Nobody seemed to. What the mountain paper used to do was the tops, you know, they used to take the tops off there.
And off the sole?
Yeah, like we used to call clubs. Can you remember clubs? They used to make the sole of wood, and then they used to pin the tops back on top of the. And that was a new pair of boots. And put the spikes in, you know, the mountain spikes. And that was worn out. And then they take them off, look after the tops, take them off, and see? Unless later on you were lucky enough to germ enough and he had a pair of boots on, you know. That's the thing he went for, but his boots and then his revolver. Aye. But he was a grand fella and he didn't beat about the bush. He says, at present, he says, you're as safe as houses. He says, there's not a germ within 50 miles of here. Oh, I said, that's great. He says, what's your plan like? I said, well, we're thinking about going to Venice. Or somewhere coastal and get a boat and putting out to sea and this other. You know, he said, you have no chance. Well, he says, what would you suggest? I said, you're more man of the world than what I am. He said, well, if I was in your position, he said, you know what I would do? I said, right, tell us. He said, I'd join the partisans. And he says, the air rains right away across Yugoslavia. And he said, I know for a fact, and you'll know like this, he says, there's airfields in Yugoslavia and London fields. I said, I don't know nothing about it. And why says this? He says, they're that organised there, the partisans, that these light aircraft can come in and land, you know, and pick someone up, or drop someone, and then, oh yeah. On a little wave strip of land, much bigger than the postage stamp, he said, you know. And I says, would you? Ah, he said, that's what I would do. But he says, meanwhile, he says, get yourself some food into you, two or three nights sleep, and you think it over, he says, plenty of time, you're safe, yeah.
Had you realised that there were partisans operating in North Italy?
No, never heard of them before in my life. No, never heard of them in my life.
That was the first time you'd heard them?
First time I'd ever heard them, yeah. Yeah, and I stopped at that village. Oh, quite a while, it must have been 2 or 3 months. Maybe man that. And there wasn't a German in sight, and a fascist, nor a Nazi, nor a partisan, and I think it was just heaven. Oh, stay our mess again. And down to Albergo and a drink of wine, and we're happiest kings. And then all of a sudden, this big main bridge over the river, where we're stopping, the big river, the big main bridge about 20 yards down the road, a platoon of Germans. Now everybody's scared of Germans, I tell him, scared them. You know, the Yugoslavians is not, they'll fight them. They'll fight anybody, them. But the Italians, they're scared, they're scared.
And just before we come to this, what was your friend's name?
What, the Italian?
Your friend, your pal.
I think it was Misseldine. James Jimmy Misseldine. Misseldine. Something like that. Because it all sounded Jewish to me. Or maybe it's my accent, you know, or maybe it's Amra Durham.
Were there just the two of you in the village? Had the others gone? Or are they still there as well?
There was six of us. There was I'd call it courts. I was only Durham. Although there was one of the lads come from Medcar, but he wasn't in the Durhams. And there's two, one from Manchester, one from somewhere down about Oldham, somewhere down about there, was it Oldham? We were cosmopolitan, you know, London, Manchester, Oldham. I was only Jory, but the other lad, this Charles Thien lad, I believe they call him courts, I believe he belonged. He lived at Redcar.
Did you find out your Italian friend's name, family name?
No, we see them days, and later on, and all through my life in Northern Italy, we used fictitious names, you know. They asked me when I first went there, what rank are you? Why, the only rank I knew was Corporale Maggiore. But they ignored the Corporale and they just thought Maggiore say, I'm English, why English is all of it, you know. They thought that, you know. So, Maggiore say,